Hello, I'm Tracy.
I'm April.
And this is Killer Spirits.
Killer Spirits.
Episode 19.
Welcome to our location.
Our undisclosed location.
Well, welcome. How was your week, April?
Good. I feel much better. I had some sketchy leftover Chinese food for breakfast, and I legit thought I was going to die. So I still haven't really eaten anything, but are drinking. So
we're definitely drinking.
Hey, my stomach feels better. For now.
That's good.
So if I start dry heaving, I'll just stop recording.
Let's not do that.
But I'm feeling much better now.
That's good.
Yeah. How was your week?
It's okay. You know.
Oh, we cut down a tree.
You cut down a tree?
Did you notice we have no tree in our front yard anymore?
No, I didn't notice.
We cut down a whole fucking tree yesterday.
That's like badass.
Like we said timber and like it fell all the way like
timber
almost to the street.
Wow, that's really cool. All by yourselves? Did you use like saws and stuff?
I called my dad.
Oh.
I was like, can you please help us? We don't have a chainsaw or
anything. That's what dads are for.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, I'll put some cuts in it.
Or those acting as dads. It's perfect.
Yeah. I'll put Yeah, he's my stepdad. But he's like, yeah, I'll put some cuts in it. So he like did some special wedge thing.
That's amazing.
And then we had a rope like tied to the top. And then we pulled it into the yard. And
I love it.
It was pretty cool. And our neighbor came by because the chainsaw was dull and he was trying to cut it. It wouldn't cut.
Oh.
And he's like, hey, do you guys need a chainsaw? And we're like, yeah.
That's so nice.
Yeah, so our neighbor a couple doors down let us borrow a chainsaw.
I mean, neighbors like offering up chainsaws, that's friends. Not weird or anything.
No. And I was like afraid it was really going to fall on the street, but it didn't.
Oh, cool.
Because when we got that big windstorm, our tree like split, sort of.
Yeah.
Not totally in half, but like basically half the tree fell off and hit the neighbor's roof, basically.
Oh, no.
Like in between our two houses. So we were like, let's just get rid of the tree.
Yeah.
Because it was all rotten.
We had a windstorm the other night, like a few nights ago.
Last week.
And it was like 50 mile an hour winds.
It was insane.
I was listening to it. I was laying there in the middle of the night. Our electricity went out. I could just hear it outside like, whoa! It was just like crazy.
It was scary.
So thankfully that's over. And then sunny this weekend.
Yeah. Half of our fence went down on that side too.
Oh, yeah. We just got our fences redone. So yay us.
It's like you move into a house and you're like, yeah, you know, all this stuff has to be fixed and you have this list. And then you're like, fuck, I didn't really want to do the whole fence right now.
Yeah.
Luckily, we have really good neighbors and they're paying for half of it. So,
well, they should. That's kind of what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, but some people are shitty and they just won't.
Yeah, don't be a shitty person.
Yeah, there's no like, you know, it's like a social agreement that you'll pay for half of it, but not everybody does.
It's like if your neighbor comes and you're getting a new fence, don't be shitty.
Yeah, don't be shitty.
Our neighbors were the opposite of shitty. They were amazing.
Good.
Yeah. But on both sides of us. But yeah, some people are definitely shitty.
Luckily, we have very good neighbors.
Don't do it.
Even the lady in the back. Never seen her face before. Talked to her through the fence multiple times. She's nice, too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we got lucky.
Very cool.
That's all that's going on with me. I'm a certified arborist, you know. Tree taker downer.
I love it. If I ever need a tree taken down, I'm calling you.
Call Eric.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll call one of you.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about your drink today because I'm excited about it.
So our drink today is a Long Island iced tea.
Ooh.
You've probably had one at a bar. If you haven't, you should order one because it's, I would say, the best bang for your buck.
It is. And I remember having a Long Island iced tea on my 21st birthday and I was like, oh God, this is a little much. I mean, I didn't drink much alcohol before my 21st birthday.
Yeah.
And I've had them a few times and they do not taste that great. So I think it really depends on your bartender. But our bartender today did a great job.
Thanks.
I'm actually really enjoying it. I've already had half of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. I feel like it's going to sneak up on you though.
It's fine. I didn't have lunch.
So a little background on the Long Island iced tea. It was invented in 1972. Allegedly, because you know how those drink drink stories go. Mm-hmm. Like, I invented the thing because I added a cherry or whatever.
Oh, yeah. So that's anyway, how we run this podcast.
Allegedly, it was invented by Robert Butt. His name Robert Butt? And his nickname was Rosebud.
Interesting.
Which sounds so weird.
It does sound weird.
But anyway, it used to be, it's a play on an old Prohibition drink.
Okay.
That was made with all the alcohols. So the rum, tequila, gin, vodka, and maple syrup.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah. So I think they were trying to come up with creative ways to drink liquor that was a little hot.
Oh.
Back in Prohibition days.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it was actually invented in like the 30s.
And we did our video for, we always do our videos on our Patreon for behind the scenes, and we show you how to make the drinks. But we were talking about gin during that video, and I was going to say that I never thought I liked gin, because when I have martinis, I always have vodka martinis.
Yes.
But then, you know, Jason said, why don't you try some gin? And we've actually been doing gin tastings where he'll pour a little bit and they're blind tastings.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it's actually been really fun. And I know you said during our video that if you haven't tried gin, you're missing out. Or if you think you don't like gin, try it again.
Yes.
I'm here to tell you that she's correct, because
I mean,
it's really delicious.
Don't, if you are convinced that you don't like gin, don't make your first drink a gin martini.
Right.
But the way that you can like mix gin with water, tonic, different things to like express different notes in the gin, it's really complex.
It really is. And the difference between the different gins we had, the botanicals and that sort of thing. I mean, I was really digging it. And I think I'm really into gin martinis now.
Yeah.
I've finally grown up.
It's like a, oh my gosh, you finally advanced.
I finally advanced.
It's like a, it's, it can be very like refreshing. I feel like it's, I always drink gin in the summer.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's like really feels light and I don't, I mean, of course you can get drunk off of it, but I don't feel like heavy, that like heavy, like you would with all this like sugar and sweetener and stuff. Yeah. Or like a heavier drink, like, I don't know. I can't think of anything. You wouldn't make cream drinks in the summer, but.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. You know what I mean? Though. Yeah, well, it's really delicious.
Thanks.
So how do we make our Long Island?
So how you make your Long Island is you do it in a shaker. I've also seen people at bars, just bartenders, do it over ice because I think that's probably just the fast way. You should do it in a shaker. So for these two drinks, I did 2 ounces of gin, 2 ounces of cachaça from our previous episode.
Reuse it, baby.
Because you could use white rum, but I don't have white rum in my bar. I'm not going to buy it.
And actually, the flavor
is good.
Bomb. I was worried there for a second.
You were like, maybe.
I don't know. But yeah, it was great.
So you can use white rum. The only white rum I have is Malibu, and we don't want coconut Long Island iced teas.
That would be an interesting one to try, though.
Yeah. I have seen recipes for like peach iced teas with peach schnapps and stuff like that. But I did the traditional route.
Yeah.
So you have gin, cachaça, 2 ounces of, I'm blanking, vodka, 2 ounces of white tequila, blanco tequila. Don't use like a reposado or a gold or anything because it's, the flavor is not right.
It needs to be like a really, one.
It's like a bunch of clear alcohol is what it's supposed to be.
Right.
And then you're also going to do a sweet and sour mix if you have it, like if you buy sweet and sour mix in the bottle. If you don't, you can use 2 ounces of lemon and or lime juice and 2 ounces of simple syrup to make up for that. Oh,
that's what you did.
And I've also heard people using margarita mix.
Huh.
Yeah. Just like 3 ounces of margarita mix. Because it's still lime and sugar.
Yeah, that's true.
It still works in a pinch.
Yeah.
If you don't want to make your own. And then you shake it over ice. Oh, I forgot triple sec. 2 ounces of triple sec.
Oh, okay.
Which is a dry orange liqueur. And then you shake it, put it over ice, and then float some, I did Diet Coke, but any Coke. I think regular Coke probably tastes better, like full sugar.
Even though this is really good.
It is really good.
But yeah, I can see where the sweetness of the regular Coke might be nice.
And then, so that kind of floats on top, like in the top half of the drink.
Yeah.
And then mix it in. And then garnish with a lime wheel on the side.
It's so pretty. And we do have pictures on our Instagram that we took of it.
And once you mix it, it is reminiscent of the color of iced tea. So you can disguise your...
Yeah, because dummy me is like, this is all clear. Why is it supposed to – isn't it supposed to look like iced tea?
I'm getting there.
Yeah, I'm getting there, Tracy. Relax yourself.
It's the Coke.
I actually had no idea that Coke was in a Long Island.
Yeah, that's, and there's actually a ton of variations of the Long Island recipe. So you can take like the base liquor part of it and you can make Tokyo tea, which has Midori instead of Coke.
Wow.
You can make like the peach one I talked about with peach schnapps instead of triple sec.
I would like to try that.
What else can you do? You can do it with blue curacao and make like a blue orangey one.
That'd be pretty.
What else is there? There's a bunch of them.
Yeah.
You can kind of like play around with your flavors because it's fun.
Yeah. No, it is fun. And I'm quite enjoying this. So just thank you.
Don't drink too many.
Yeah. Because in all honesty, when you first said you were making a Long Island, I was like, really? Yeah. But I'm pleasantly surprised.
Another variation, the New England iced tea has cranberry juice instead of Coke.
Oh, okay.
Which could be good. Right
in New England.
Yeah.
Way to step it up. Get some bladder health in there.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
So that's my Long Island story.
It's really, really, really good. And before we move on, I just have to do a little shout out to my friend Matt. Just want to say hi.
Hi, Matt.
Thank you for listening. Yeah, shoot us a message. We might do a shout out for you if you write us on our email.
That's true. We like to hear from you guys.
Yeah. What's our email again?
Oh, killerspiritspod@gmail.com. Also, you can find us on Instagram @killerspiritspod.
Yeah. Write us a little message. We like to hear from you, and we might give a little shout out, you know.
We are just two people working from home staring at our phones all day. So please reach out and say hi.
I stare at iPads sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. So hi, Matt. Thanks for listening.
What's up? Okay. So should we get started on our story today, which is set in Long Island?
Is it going to be like last time?
Have you heard of this podcast? It's called Killer
Spirits. I know, but is it like sick like last time? I don't know.
No, it's actually not. Well, I mean...
Is it going to make me have dreams?
Was the last one bad for you?
It was hard.
Yeah, the last one was definitely hard.
I mean, I am like obviously being much more of a baby about it because you're the one who had to do all the reading and research. But yeah, that was hard.
Yeah, if you haven't listened to our last one, we did the chicken coop murders. Yeah. It's a rough one. But again, I will say it's a story that must be told because
– True.
We can't all put our heads in the sand.
That's true.
You know, and not notice things or see things. I think it's good for people to know. But this one is kind of bad, but this one is set in Long Island, hence the reason we're having Long Island iced tea.
Long Island.
I have been to Long Island once, but it was only to go to a Target. But I have been.
How is their Target?
The Target was fabulous, oh, guys. Okay. Thanks. Wow. Yeah, this was probably like in 2010 or something like
that's
that.
That's your tour guide.
That's my
snippet.
Yeah.
Welcome to Long Island. This is the Target. It's great.
I drove there with some friends from Manhattan. That's all I know about it. But the actual drive looked great. So I'm sure it's a fabulous place to be. It looks really great. But that's the only. The only touristy thing I've ever done. I don't even know if that's considered touristy.
I think it's considered an errand.
It's called, yeah. Hey, when you live in Brooklyn, going to Target is a big fucking deal.
Is it?
There's nothing around. There's no big stores around there. So you have to drive out places to go.
You just have like a CVS, huh?
Yeah, or like, you know, here's a Whole Foods and you're like, there goes my whole paycheck and I still can't get everything I need. Or you have to order it from Amazon. So, I mean, hey, going to Target that time. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Kelly.
Hey, what's up? That was actually a really fun outing for all of us. Okay. So today we're going to talk about the Wickham family axe murders. And this is going to be set in the 1800s. It's a really interesting story. The sources I used, I actually only used one. It is called Murder on Long Island, a 19th century tale of tragedy and revenge by Jeffrey Fleming and Amy Folk. So this is a book written by them on this case. It's really good. I highly recommend it. I will obviously not touch on all the things they touch on. So you can read more about the trial. You can read all kinds of stuff in this book. So go get it. If you want to know more about the history of the area too, they talk a lot about the history of Long Island as well, which cool. Yeah, which I didn't know a lot of that stuff. So Joseph Wickham, who is actually the great-great-great nephew of James and Francis Wickham, which we're going to talk about in the story, said that when he was growing up, his grandfather would often tell the story of the Wickham axe murders as they all sat around the dinner table. So this story was one of many in the Wickham family lore, but probably the most memorable. And of course, he was a child, so yeah. The grandchildren would listen with their eyes wide open and imagine being chopped up alive. Oh my it was kind of a, you know, just great conversation for the
kids.
Yeah, I love it. It totally sounds like something I would have been into as a kid. Like, wait, what happened in our family? Yeah. Whoa. And he found out later that he actually often stayed in the same bedroom where the murders occurred.
Yikes.
And even though some say there are ghosts there, he never saw any. But he did say he was a very heavy sleeper.
Open yourself up to seeing them.
Yes.
Please.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of interesting. He did a little forward in the book about that. So in 1864, James and Francis Wickham lived on Long Island, New York in Cachaug. Okay.
Okay.
I had to look up how to say that. So it's called Cachaug.
Cachaug.
The name Cachaug is derived from an Algonquin word meaning principal place. And many of the local Native Americans lived at Fort Cachaug before the American English settlers began arriving around 1640, mm-hmm. including the Wickham family around 1686.
Oh, so they were there really early.
Yeah, so they were there very, very early. James Wickham was born in 1804 and was the eldest son of William and Anna, and he was born in Cachaug just after the start of the new decade. While there's really not much information on his childhood, he was probably educated locally with his brothers and sisters. He did have many brothers and sisters. After his death, newspapers reported that during his early adulthood, he spent some time in the Syracuse area where he was a partner in a grocery firm called Wickham and Carwin.
Grocery firm?
Yeah. He ran a grocery in Fulton, New York. And he also seemed to have branched out in his own business. He was listed as a proprietor in a paper stationery store.
Hmm.
So he was making good money.
He's busy.
He was busy. But he actually ended up retiring and going into farming.
Oh,
but
okay.
At this point, he had a good living. He made a good living.
Mm-hmm.
So on May 5th, 1847, James Wickham returned to Long Island to marry Frances Post at the West Hampton Presbyterian Church in West Hampton, Long Island. And Frances was the youngest and sixth child of Abraham Post and Sarah Howell. She was born in Southampton town, which is about 30 minutes from Cachaug.
Okay.
Well, 30 minutes by, you know, us driving.
Mm-hmm.
So,
probably
I don't know.
Back then.
Tack on a lot more time.
Yeah.
If you're in a carriage.
Yeah.
She was born on May 31st, 1821. And Frances's father, Abraham Post, was actually noted several times in the Sag Harbor Corrector, which was the paper of the time, for being involved in two bankruptcy proceedings.
Ooh.
After the death of her mother. So, yeah, it sounds like there was a little bit of roughness in the family there. So, Frances was considered an older bride at the time. She was 26 when she got married.
Okay.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Gotta be an old-ass bride.
Right? And there was also a 17-year gap between her and James.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, like, young enough to be his child.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's okay. Correct. That I think that was not out of the ordinary back then, though, for sure. So it's possible that they met when she was visiting her relatives.
Oh, okay.
Though there's not really much said about how they met, but it's possible that's what happened. So when James retired to become a farmer, he, like I said, he was pretty financially well-to-do. He was doing well. They made a really nice house. I believe they built it. He had invested in businesses other than his own. So, like the paper company and some other things.
Oh, okay.
And he was getting a good return on those shares.
He was a good businessman.
Yeah, he was. And upon his death, his property and personal estate was valued at over $20,000, which was a lot at that
time.
That's
a lot.
It was a lot, yeah. So, at the beginning of the 19th century, thousands of Catholic families in Ireland were surviving on farms in as small as half an acre. So we've gone to Ireland for just a minute.
Okay.
So, yeah. So leave Long Island, come to Ireland with me. In 1846, disaster struck when the potato crop was struck with a blight.
Right.
So we've heard that as the potato famine. Mm-hmm. And millions who depended on that harvest starved. I mean, if you have half an acre of land and you're growing potatoes, which literally you could sustain your 100%. Family.
You could survive only on potatoes.
I actually could now.
I know, huh?
Yeah. But yeah, so that was gone. Their half acre was really giving them nothing. And so there was a lot of people who were thrown off their farms for non-payment of rent. And those people pretty much made a max exodus. They made a mass exodus.
They gone.
Yeah, they came to the U.S. and Canada. And this, you know, big influx of immigration lasted about 5 years.
Can you imagine what your options are when you're literally starving to death?
You have none.
You're like, I guess I'll just get on a boat and fucking leave because there's no food here.
And guess what? That still happens today.
Yeah, I know.
So everyone just relax, okay? Because I'm sorry, if that was my family, I would be getting on a fucking boat and coming over here.
No kidding.
I'm not going to watch my children starve and die, okay? So between 1846 and 1851, the potato crops just failed again and again and again and again. Nothing was working. So pretty much millions of Irish families had to choose between starving to death or using the money they'd saved up to buy this passage to immigrate, mm-hmm. to come over to America. Yeah. So Nicholas Behan, and his last name is spelled B-E-H-A-N. And when I looked it up, it said Behan. I've also seen it as Bane, but I'm going to say Behan for this because that's what it said to say.
I think I saw it written on one of the – when I was looking up the location of this, that it was written as B-A-I-N.
Yeah.
So maybe they say Bane. But
yeah, or I've seen it written as B-A-I-N, but
– yeah.
So we're going to call him Behan. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry, Nicholas.
Just listen to it.
So, okay, Nicholas Behan was one of the Irishmen who wanted a better life in America. And in 1854, a local newspaper actually described him as, quote, a little above the medium height, about 20 years of age, and very strongly built. There was nothing in the expression of his face, which at first glance would strike one as unfavorable, but did not improve on very close observation. His eyes, which were dark brown or black, were deep set and had a peculiar, sinister look, and his forehead, though high, was so remarkably broad at the base as to attract attention.
So he looked like a real goofball weirdo?
Yeah. Okay. So obviously this newspaper didn't describe him in the very nicest light.
But this was after the fact, right?
This was obviously after the fact.
This wasn't like his mother talking about him.
No.
So
anyway, that just kind of gives you a little glance. He was about 20. He was a dude. He came over from Ireland, okay? Yeah.
And he looked a little sketchy.
Yeah. And he pretty much arrived during that time when Irish immigrants were coming to America in very large numbers, mm-hmm. Especially in New York. And there was a lot of hatred and racism.
Yeah.
And we touched a little bit on this about Italians too, but Irish were also getting that same backlash. Mm-hmm. The Irish were portrayed as violent drunks in popular culture. And also the Catholic religion was not viewed favorably at all. So many Irish Catholics were forced to buy land in secret on Eastern Long Island to establish their churches.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, land had to be sold through a third party and then to church leaders as to avoid complaints from local Protestants. Mm-hmm. Because Protestants were like, oh, hell no, Catholics. Well, we don't want you in here.
Protestants don't like Catholics even in Ireland.
Correct.
I mean, they feud everywhere.
There's been a lot of contention between both for many years in England, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just to give you a little example of kind of how the local people thought about Irish people, on the North Fork, which is near Cachaug, Summer residents like the Stevenson family had strong feelings regarding the Irish. There's a letter that was found written in the late summer of 1851 by Mrs. Mark Stevenson, who wrote to her son William regarding a lecture that had been given by a Professor Roberson, in which he had talked about the achievements made by the United States with the help of its Irish residents. Okay. And she did not agree with this.
Okay.
And she said, quote, "There never was a greater blight befell any country than Irish immigration. They are the locusts of Egypt, and they arrive by the thousands. Our poor houses are overflowing, although they enlarge them every year, and our taxes are enormous. These are the patriots of our country abounds with, whose ignorance, barbarism, and dirt has passed into a proverb. As great, noble, and intelligent as he has endeavored to portray the Irish character, I feel thankful that not a drop of blood of the Celtic race runs through my veins."
That's deep. I also feel like that's kind of how we, I don't say we as in myself, but how we kind of think of homeless people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Many groups of people.
Yeah.
I was just going to say it hasn't changed at all.
No.
Yeah, especially about immigrants, which I'm sorry, guys, but I just have to say this. Unless you're Native American, you're an immigrant.
Hello.
Hello. So at some point, most of us were immigrants at some point. Yeah, unless you're Native. And that percentage is very small nowadays, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that was kind of the thought about Irish people at the time.
That's rough.
They were considered very rough, drunks and that sort of thing. And it was pervasive.
I mean, I have seen a drunk Irishman in my day, but...
Well, I've seen a lot of drunk people in my day.
Yeah, that's true.
But I do agree
with you. I can't say it's exclusive to them.
No, not at all. No. I've been a drunk... I'm a drunk Irish person.
That's true. I guess I'm a drunk English person.
Exactly. Oh, you didn't have any Irish in your 23andMe?
None.
Oh, wow. No, yeah.
I was English / Irish, but it's because they're the same... You know.
Oh, yeah.
Landmass.
No, I actually...
So really, it's English.
Yeah. On my paternal side, we are fully Irish.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel for you.
I didn't get any of that.
All right. So Nicholas Behan, mm-hmm. he was one of five children. He had two brothers and two sisters who actually remained in Ireland with his parents. He came over here. And he was born in Ireland about 1830, and he came to America in 1851. Exactly where he was raised in Ireland is unclear, but he did travel to Liverpool, England at one point, to one of the largest ports in Europe, and was also a center for immigration, and he immigrated from there to America. He booked a passage on a ship called the Constellation, which sounds like a really cool name. He arrived in New York City on Friday, September 5th, 1851. And of course, the first thing you do when you arrive is you need to find a fucking job.
Oh, know? I was going to say eat.
But
yeah, job.
Yeah.
You mean like life goal.
Your life goal.
I'm like, I need a sandwich. I've been on this boat
like,
for...
Hello, I'm starving. Yeah. I mean, that journey is multiple weeks, so... Yeah. I need a sandwich. but unfortunately, the best jobs were not available to newly arrived immigrants like Behan.
That sucks.
Yeah, there was actually a lot of signs advertising positions, but those signs would also include the line that said, "No Irish need apply."
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's not helpful.
No.
So just a few years after his arrival, New York City had over 200,000 residents who could claim Irish ancestry. That's a lot of people at the time. His first recorded job was actually across the water in New Jersey, where he was employed in a brickyard. And then he took another job, this time back in the city, where he remained until he moved to Kutchok.
Oh, okay.
So he registered with the Immigrant Labor Exchange, and that's a place that was meant to place recent immigrants in suitable positions. And his move to out to Long Island, it began because James Wickham offered to hire him, based on his registration at the Immigrant Labor Exchange.
Oh, so he needed help, so he hired from the, it's like a temp agency.
Kind of. Yeah. So a lot of these farms needed hired hands. And, you know, one of the things when he immigrated over here, when they take all your information when you're, you know, when you first come through, it said, you know, you're either a work hand or you're a laborer, which mm-hmm. is just a very blanketed statement, because whether you're skilled or not, you can just always say that, mm-hmm. you know. And so a lot of people actually had that, that that's what they were considered, were laborers or workmen. Mm-hmm. So he was hired by James Wickham to work on his farm, which probably sounded like a great job at the time, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, so after he arrived at the farm, he met Ellen Holland. And Ellen Holland was born around 1819, which is interesting to me. So she would have been quite a bit older than him. He was born in 1830.
Hmm.
So
10 years, 11 years older?
Yeah. She was born in County Monaghan in the northeast of Ireland. And prior to 1860, there's really no records kept on the births or deaths of the Catholic population. It's really hard to decipher a lot of that. Her early life and family history is actually unrecorded.
Oh.
And she herself actually wasn't really sure how old she was. So that's why she was...
That's bizarre.
Probably born in 1819. Yeah.
Like your parents don't tell you what year you were born?
Yeah. I mean, she didn't know.
That's weird.
I know. Isn't that bizarre? It's a little different. Mm. And she probably belonged to one of the many Catholic farm families in the area. Mm. She also arrived to America from Ireland in 1851 on a ship called the Robert Parker.
Hey.
Which I thought was cute. So Nicholas Bien was a good worker when he was there. Mm-hmm. But he was also known to have a temper.
Oh.
Yeah. He was a little feisty Irishman, apparently. Okay. He started courting Ellen Holland in late 1853 or early 1854. They're not sure. And began giving her small presents. He really liked him some Ellen. Okay. Ellen kept the gifts, but she was not feeling it. Okay. She was definitely not into him.
Oh.
The way that he was into her.
Okay. Well, apparently, judging by the news story, he wasn't really a looker.
Well, yeah, but who knows about that? Because, you know, I don't really trust I feel like, especially around that time, the papers, I mean, that was really how you got all your information. Mm-hmm. And it was very sensational.
Yeah.
So who knows? I mean, he must not have been that scary looking. He probably was just a young guy.
Yeah, probably.
You know? But even so, she wasn't into it.
Right.
You know, she's like,
she's like, thanks for the gifts, but.
Thanks for the gifts, which she obviously kept, but she's, you know, she's just not into it. So during the week of May 20th, 1854, she actually told Frances Wickham, who is the lady of the house, mm-hmm. that she did not reciprocate Bean's affection and probably told her that she was skeeved out about all his aggressive attention because he was getting a little aggressive. And she's like, look,
stalker behavior. Dude.
Yeah. And I mean, they both live at the same place, you know. Yeah. He doesn't live in the house. Ellen actually did live in the attic. Like, she had a room in the attic with another servant.
Yeah.
He lived, like, off in, like, certain other quarters.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're around each other all the time.
He's like, I can see you from your window.
Yeah. And she's like, I'm not into this. And this is actually – and so what do you do? I mean, if that happened to your work now, you're going to go to your boss.
Yeah.
And be like, look, this is actually really affecting me.
Right.
And I don't like this. So Frances was like, oh, hell no. We're not doing this. Okay. And she actually informed Nicholas that his attentions were unwanted.
You better listen to the lady of the house.
Yeah, and he better leave Ellen alone. She's like, I'm not dealing with this. This is my house. Hello.
Yeah. Okay. I need you guys to work, so just focus on working.
Exactly. And
knock it off.
Also, back then, it was a lot different. I mean, you know, just the social expectations of people. I mean, it was considered just it was not kosher what was going on here.
Right.
So Nicholas was obviously pretty pissed, and he was probably extra pissed because – you know, even though Frances was technically the woman of the house, she was still a woman.
True.
And she was his boss's wife, but I think he was extra pissed because he didn't want a woman telling him what to do.
Okay.
Is kind of what I got from this.
Some men still have that problem.
Oh, really? I never noticed that. Yeah. So that week, even after he was told this, he still tried to persuade Ellen to meet him alone out on the road. Like, away from the house. I know. Can you believe that?
Did she do it?
And Ellen was like, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that.
Okay. So she must have got some, like, real creepy vibes then.
No, she was definitely getting creepy. Like, she was really, really upset about all of this. And she was like, look, I'll meet you on the north stoop of the house. And if you have anything to say to me, you can do it at the house. Because she probably felt safest there.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, she was not into meeting him at all. She was like, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, he must have really creeped her out.
Yeah. On Saturday, May 27th, 1854, James Wickham had gone to New York on business. And he wasn't going to be back until that evening or the next morning. Mm-hmm. Okay, so he was gone. So Mrs. Wickham, Frances, decided this would be a great day to restuff those mattresses, which who knew you had to restuff mattresses? I'm not quite sure what you were restuffing them with, but that was a thing that you had to do. I guess so. But anyway, they're mattresses. So her and Ellen couldn't do this by herself. She couldn't say, hey, let's take out these mattresses. Go to the mattresses. What is that from? Is that from The Godfather? Take them to the mattresses. Take them to the mattresses. Yeah. I kept thinking that about this.
You could have been a contender.
Yeah, could have been a contender. So anyway, she asked Nicholas, could you carry all the mattresses out of the house? Blah, blah, blah. Well, while carrying one of the mattresses, he accidentally on purpose slammed one of the mattresses into Frances.
Okay.
Really hard, like into a door, and she hurt her side. And she was actually so upset and frightened by this incident that she slept in a different room that night.
Dang.
Yeah. Because he's pissed. Yeah. And that he was being very, I mean, I don't know. I guess it is kind of passive aggressive. He was being aggressive aggressive.
Just not saying why he was being aggressive.
Exactly. Yeah. So, needless to say, James Wickham came home and he was pissed.
Yeah.
And he was like, yo, bro, you're fired. Yeah. Okay. Like, we're not doing this.
Yeah. You don't scare my worker and then slam my wife into a wall.
Exactly. Yeah. You know. So James was still trying to be nice though, because he did pay a debt that Nicholas had with the storekeeper. So, you know, like you go to the store and then you'd have like a, what's it called?
Where like a tab.
A tab. Yeah, yeah. Something like that. Like put it on my tab. That used to be a thing. Mm-hmm. So he had like a $10 tab there, which is kind of a lot of money back then.
Yeah.
So James paid that to the storekeeper, William Betts, and he also gave Nicholas $2, which was enough to pay for a train out of town. He was like, here's your money. Like,
get the fuck out of here.
You need to go. Okay?
You have no reason to be here.
And by all accounts, Nicholas was like, fine, whatever. Whatever, dude. He actually went down the road to William Wickham Sr.'s farm, which was James's father, and slept with a bunch of the other farmhands, like in their place.
Oh, so he actually left the property.
Yeah, he left the property. He went down the street, slept there. The next morning, on Wednesday, May 31st, he got up and actually had breakfast with James's father and told him about losing his job. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that conversation went or what was said, but later that day, Nicholas went back to the Wickham farm and asked for his job back. And James was like, no, brah. not quite sure you heard me the first time, but we're done.
You're
like,
not going to do better.
You're not getting your job back.
You're done.
Like, you actually injured my wife. Yeah. It's not happening. Okay. So Nicholas then demanded that James give him a horse. And James was like, no, brah.
Okay. I don't think you heard me.
You are fired, and I'm not giving you a horse because he said that he was cruel to horses, which actually is really bothers me. So there must have been some other issues happening here. Also, after he left the first time, Ellen had realized that $30 was missing from her room that she'd been saving. Oh. Now, let's just remember, this was 1854. $30
is a lot of money.
She was saving that money. Like, she was really good about saving money. It was missing, and she told James and Frances about it. So when Nicholas came back the next day, James asked him, like, did you steal that money? And he was like, yeah, I stole that money because she owes me for all the gifts I gave her. Really, dude?
Dude.
Okay.
You're pushing it.
You're just, like, it's beyond pushing it. Okay. So he left. Nicholas left. Without his horse.
No horse with $2.
No horse for you.
$32 blah, blah,
blah. Now he's got $32, fucker. Right? He could have easily just left town with that $30 and just been like, whatever.
Yeah.
Screw you bitches. So on Friday, June 2nd, just after midnight, he returned to the Wickham farm and he grabbed a post axe that was there as part of the work tools. He was very familiar with the farm, okay? He had a lot of tools to choose from. Yeah. He chose the post axe and proceeded to enter the house. So the a post axe is also called a mortise axe, and it was a common item on most farms around this time, and it was used to cut mortise holes. I hope I'm saying that mortise, I don't know. And was employed in completing fence hole posts. So that's what it was used for.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. I can post a picture of it too. They have a picture of it. So he actually left his shoes outside and put his hat on the furnace and crawled in the window. Mm. Okay. Well, he left his shoes outside, crawled in the window, and then put his hat on the furnace because the furnace is inside.
Yeah.
Now, just so you know, the Wickhams actually had a big Newfoundland dog. Big ass dog. I don't know if you've ever seen a Newfoundland.
They're okay. Huge.
They're huge.
Yeah.
But the dog knew him.
Oh.
Dog's like, hey, what's up, guy? I haven't seen you in a while. Probably got super dogs excited. Dogs love
everybody.
Yeah. So, and also he probably gave the dog some treats. So he was like, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. He ended up sneaking up to the servant stairs and entered the bedroom above the kitchen where the other farmhand, Stephen Winston, slept. Now, Stephen was actually just a 12 or 13-year-old kid.
Oh.
Okay. He was an African-American who had come to work for Mr. Wickham from New York City, and he was one of seven siblings. And his mother, who had been born in Virginia, came to New York from the South, probably seeking a better life
right.
than from the South. And Stephen may have actually been indentured to them. It's unclear. Mm. But he was really there to work, but also to learn a trade.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
That, yeah, so that he, and he slept in the house. He had his own room. Mm-hmm. And
so he was like maybe kind of like an apprentice or something.
Yeah, something like yeah. that. Yeah. Anyway, Nicholas snuck in his room. He was first. Mm-hmm. And he struck him multiple times on the head while he slept with the axe. Frances Wickham heard this noise and opened her door. And well, she started to open her door, and literally Nicholas was right there at the door. And then James had woke up too because they heard the noise right. and they both woke up.
I wonder why he went after the kid first.
I think he went after him because his expectation was that I'm going to get rid of this because he might alert them to something.
Yeah, or he might try to, like, stop me.
Right. And then he was expecting that everyone would be asleep. He was just going to walk into Francis and James's room and just – they were going to be asleep and he was just going to do his business and leave. But unfortunately, Francis woke up mm-hmm. and then woke James up. Mm-hmm. And so she was standing at the door and then James got up and they actually tried to push Nicholas into the hall. Oh. Like, get out. You're not yeah. – you know, you don't belong here. What are you doing here? And that made him more pissed. So he actually shoved them back into their room and he struck James on the head first with the axe. Okay. He struck him over 20 times.
Shit.
Okay. Like with such fury. And then he turned his sights on Frances, who at this point probably realized she couldn't help her husband at this point. Right. She was actually trying to crawl out the window.
Yikes.
He grabbed her and struck her twice on the head. The blows were so hard that her skull was shattered, causing blood and brain matter to be on the walls and floor.
Jesus
Christ. Yeah, I'm sorry. Is this not better than the last one?
I mean.
Your face. I'm sorry.
That's rough.
No, it's absolutely horrific.
It's the brain matter part.
I know.
That grosses me out.
My bad.
I was already feeling nauseous this morning.
Take a sip. Take a sip. Yeah, yeah. Woo. All right. So remember, the reason he's come is because he's pissed at Ellen.
Right.
Okay. So, his actual target
yeah.
is Ellen.
Right.
Okay. I mean, he's pissed off at Francis, too, but he wants to make Ellen pay. So, Ellen and another servant, Catherine Dowd, were in their shared room in the attic, and they heard screaming.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, and they also heard Francis say, no, Nicholas.
Oh, so she knew.
Yeah, she knew. And, they knew some shit was going down. And so, they were like, you know, at first... Ellen said to Catherine, like, okay, let's hide. And then they quickly realized that, like, that's not going to work.
Let's get the fuck out of here.
Like, let's get the fuck out of yeah. here is exactly what they decided. So they crawled out the attic window. They decided that was the best idea. Catherine climbed out first onto the roof of the milk house, which is right there. And after jumping to the ground, they started booking it to a neighbor's house, which, I mean, when you say neighbor's house, that's quite a, that you got to run like a long ways.
Yeah.
It's not like your neighbor is like our neighbors now, you know.
It's a good thing they were like young-ish, healthy-ish people. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So they started booking it to the neighbor's house, William Betts. Remember, he's the storekeeper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Storekeeper, William.
Hi, William. So Nicholas went to find Ellen, of course, after all this business, and realized she was gone from the attic. And he probably started panicking a little bit. And then he tried to run out of the house through the front door, but he possibly got lost in the dark. And he ended up back in Francis and James' room.
What an idiot.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So he just ended up dropping the axe and crawling out their window. Because he was like, fuck this. I'm not going to try to find the door. I'm just going to get out of here.
Yeah.
And I think also at this time, people heard the dog barking. Like, it was just a mess at this point.
Well, I mean, if your owner starts screaming, usually the dogs start barking.
Yeah. I think Catherine and Ellen heard the dog barking, too. Because I think the dog finally realized, like, I don't think you're here to give me treats, man.
No. My mom's screaming.
You're doing bad things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Catherine got to the Betts house, who, of course, at first thought she was just being nuts because that's how people always treat women. You ever notice that? Like, I know there was another story I told where someone was trying to tell them and they were like, you're just being crazy.
Yeah.
No, she's actually like telling them there's a murder happening.
Yeah.
So they finally got their asses moving and they grabbed the local doctor, Dr. Benjamin Carpenter, and some more neighbors so they could all go there together. And they made their way to the farm. They entered the Wickham's house and went up to the room, which was said to resemble the interior of a slaughterhouse.
Oh my gosh.
There were skull fragments, splashes of blood, and brain matter all over the room. As the doctor entered the room, James actually tried to rise on his hands and knees.
Oh.
Crying, oh my, oh dear, before collapsing again on the floor.
So James was hit 20 times and Francis was hit twice?
Yes.
Okay.
They're both still alive.
Oh, God.
Okay. Yeah, I know. So the doctor assesses Francis and found her in even worse shape. Probably, I don't know, maybe the way her head was hit. I'm not sure.
Or maybe his extra fury somehow.
Yeah. Her skull had been penetrated by vicious blows that caused a large portion of brain matter to be thrown upon the floor.
No.
I know. They also discovered Stephen, poor little Stephen, who was just a baby.
I know, 12 years old.
Yes, and he had received 3 blows, one of which removed one of his ears and another that badly fractured his skull.
Fuck.
Can you even imagine doing, like, ugh. It's just horrific.
Seeing a sweet 12-year-old's face.
No. It's awful. So, just so you know, spoiler alert, Stephen would ultimately survive.
Oh, that's good.
Okay.
But no ear.
But yeah, but he does survive.
Yeah,
so
that's
one good thing. I will give you that little nugget as we move forward.
Okay, that'll comfort me.
Yeah. It took Francis a few hours to die.
Oh.
It took over 20 hours for James to pass away. He never regained consciousness.
Yikes.
Yeah, it was very, very sad. And you know, of course, this is the 1800s. It's not like you're going to stick him in the ambulance, take him to the hospital, blah, blah,
no.
blah. The doctor basically was just like, I'm going to assess you. I'm going to put you in the bed. I'm going to make you as comfortable as I can. There's no surgery. There's nothing happening. That was all he could do. So pretty much he just kept vigil over them and for the next 20 hours until.
Like a hospice care or something. Yeah.
And took care of Stephen also. So on June 2nd, 1854, the hunt was on for Nicholas. He hid in the woods and even tried to seek help from other local Irishmen. One he went to by the name of John Thompson, and John was on to him pretty soon, like after he arrived, even though I don't know if he necessarily heard it was him, but he came like probably covered in scratches and bruises
and blood.
Like looking like a fucking mess.
Yeah.
And he tried to arrest him, but Nicholas pulled a gun. It was going to shoot him. But there was another passing wagon that saved John's life, thankfully.
Oh.
Yeah. So Nicholas ran off again, and there was nearly 1,000 people in the search.
Wow.
That's a lot of people back then.
I'm thinking of like a torch mob.
Yeah.
Like with the torches and the, what are those things called? Pitchforks?
Yes.
Like
yes.
running through the woods
right.
looking for him.
And remember, like, this was also on the Sabbath day. You know, this is their normal day to, you know, do their Sabbath stuff. And, you know, now they're, you know, because the search went on for a couple days.
Yeah.
So on the morning of June 5th, just before 9 a.m., two members of the search party, John Jones and John Jacobs. Doesn't that just sound so like 1800s to you?
It does. I'm Everyone like, has the same name.
Wow.
Yeah.
They entered a swampy area located just north of the Hermitage Railway Station. And Jones stumbled over something in the water and actually discovered it was a man. And John Jacobs then grabbed hold of the man and lifted him out of the water. And it was Nicholas. And he'd been wounded by a self-inflicted knife cut to the throat. It's superficial.
Yeah.
Again.
It usually is.
Hide the unicorn.
Yeah.
Like, so dramatic.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's laying there. Obviously, he's not dead. They all fire their guns in the air to announce the capture because they'd been doing this for multiple days. They were over this shit. They finally caught him. And the constables who had come from New York at that time, they actually had to restrain them from hanging him on the spot. Because, you know, that was the thing that people
get upset.
Yes. Could you imagine people just going out and searching for criminals now? Like, that are not the police?
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
Like a citizen's arrest?
Yeah, but it just, I don't know if the cops would appreciate that now. The way they did Maybe back not. Then. Probably not.
Could tie them up.
Wait for
the cops to get there.
That's true. So, Nicholas was carted away to Riverhead, where the local jail was. And after his capture, on the way to Riverhead, Nicholas asked the sheriff if they could stop the carriage and see Ellen as they passed through Cutchogue.
Creep.
And the sheriff was like, sure, that sounds great.
What the fuck?
It's just so weird to me.
Oh, my God.
So they take the carriage down to the Wickham's farmhouse. Ellen ran up to the stop carriage and asked if he had murdered the Wickhams, to which he replied, yes, and you were the cause of it.
Oh, that's okay. Fun.
So then she bursts into tears, runs back in the house. And then Nicholas asks the sheriff, can I want to see their bodies. I want to see the Wickhams' bodies. You know, they were both passed away by this point.
Okay.
And the sheriff did deny that, thankfully.
Okay.
Like, dude, like, what the
dude,
fuck?
Dude, I don't even know where their bodies are. Like, come on. They're being buried already.
Yeah, right. And then he was taken to be placed at the jail in Riverhead. I just thought that was so funny that he could just be like, so I want to see this girl that I tried to murder.
Yeah, if you could pull us through a Burger King, I'd appreciate that.
That'd be great. Thanks.
Yeah, I ran out of cigarettes, so if you give me some of those, that'd be great.
Yeah. I got some requests.
Yeah, can we stop at the bar?
So funny. So ultimately, Nicholas would be prosecuted by Ogden Hoffman. And Ogden Hoffman was actually pretty known at the time for another very famous trial for Mary Jewett, which is a story we're going to cover soon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's so fun. It's about the same time.
Cool.
Same time period in New York.
Oh, okay.
So get ready for another New York cocktail.
I'm ready.
Okay. So, he was prosecuted by Ogden Hoffman and Alexander Haddon. I think it might actually be Haddon. I'm going to call him Haddon. Alexander Haddon. Hoffman was known for being very fair and just as a prosecutor, so that's good. Nicholas's defense attorney was named Spicer Dayton. That is the coolest fucking name.
Spicer Dayton?
Spicer.
What are you, a cake?
I love it.
It's like a cupcake name.
I think it's good. Of course, the press were going nuts this story.
Of course.
And reporters started coming to Cutchogue in droves. Like droves.
Yeah.
And it was also a thing back then to let people just kind of traipse around the crime scene.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
it's a thing.
The evidence didn't really do much.
And I also, they probably couldn't do much with the evidence.
Yeah. Like, what are we going to do?
Yeah, I don't know. It just,
mop the blood up.
I'm
I really, don't know.
Yeah, I'm glad that this is not a thing
anymore.
There's
nothing to test it with.
Yeah. So one reporter from the Tribune was able to go inside and wrote an article describing the scene, and one line said, quote, the corners of the walls of the rooms and passages through which the murdered must have groped his way show marks of his bloody fingers and smutches of blood.
Ooh.
I like the word smutches, and we don't use that enough anymore.
It isn't it just supposed to be smudges?
Yeah, but smutches is a word. I looked it up. Yeah. It's just a long past word that no one uses anymore.
Does it mean smudges?
It does.
Oh.
Yeah. Smutches is means smudges.
Smutches.
Yeah. So apparently, when this reporter went walking through the house to do this article, poor little Steven was still in his room being looked after.
Bro.
Because he made mention of Steven being
there. Have some fucking courtesy.
So weird.
Don't come in and do news reports when the kid's laying there with no ear.
I'm telling you, newspapers back then.
Yeah.
Actually, newspapers now. I don't know. They're still kind of crazy. I just feel like we can get, but we can get our information from so many different sources now. That it maybe not as, you know, I don't know. I don't know what's better. I don't have.
I don't know who's lying. Somebody's lying. I don't Everyone's know who lying. I guess it's somewhere in the middle.
You just choose which one you think you might agree with the most.
That's true. And then you just watch only that one. You only get one side of the story forever.
Exactly.
That's just how it goes.
That's just how it goes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So not just reporters traveled there, though. Like, regular folk also jumped on trains and made their way to watch the entertainment.
Hey, do you want to go to the Wickham House?
I'm telling you, the 1800s were wild.
There's some probably dead people there and some blood on the walls. Yeah. You want to go check it out?
That'd be awesome. So a common form of recreation for tourists at this time was to pay an admission fee to the caretakers of public buildings or institutions. So you could tour places like lighthouses and government buildings, which we already still do that, blah, blah, blah. But for amusement, you could also walk through establishments such as insane asylums.
No.
And these are with people in them.
Mm-hmm.
Jails or other places where people were confined.
So I will say this.
You could look at the inmates in their cells.
You can still do that.
I can just decide...
If you had a reason.
Okay.
Like.
But these people had no reason.
No.
They just had some money that they're giving to the caretakers.
Yeah, you don't pay for it. But just like you can do a ride along with a cop.
Right. That's different.
You can visit.
Right. These are just regular people.
You can't go on a tour.
Hi, we just came from out of town on the train and I have my 7-year-old. Can we go look at
that's
the,
really
at the
fucking
people
weird.
In the insane asylum?
That's weird.
It's bonkers. Okay. So, County Hall in Riverhead held the jail for the eastern half of Suffolk County and had probably been visited by many people looking to pass the time viewing those who were incarcerated in there.
That's bizarre. Right?
So, the jailers and caretakers of institutions where the public was allowed to visit were normally permitted to pocket the admission fees as a perk of the job. Mm-hmm. So, they're, yeah, come on. Come one, come all. They liked it.
Huh.
Isn't that crazy? So in Riverhead, where Nicholas was being held, the general public was more than eager to view the murderer of the Wickhams.
I think this is also part of it, is that there's basically no fucking entertainment. You know, there's like shows yeah, or like, true. You know, plays you could go to or whatever. But people were basically just sitting around like reading the Bible or whatever.
Yeah. No, good point.
Like, they're fucking bored.
And church is not entertaining.
No, not usually.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, maybe now it's more entertaining than it used to be, but...
So, like, I'm sorry. If someone says I'm morbid, let's look back in the 1800s.
They were sick. It's
they
like
were
all those
fucking
people,
morbid as fuck.
It's like all those people that would just watch people get their heads cut off in City Hall.
Yeah, I know. They loved it.
Or in City Square or whatever.
Yeah.
Thousands, tens of thousands of people
tens
would show
of
up.
Thousands.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. So, the Suffolk County jailer... by the name of Daniel R. Edwards, was making bank because people would be coming in.
Hey.
He'd be pocketing.
You got a popular prisoner.
Yep. Hundreds of tourists passing through Riverhead on their way to hotels and boarding houses on both the North and South Forks of the island stopped in at the jail asking to see Nick.
Show us Nick.
I want to see Nick. Nicholas. Yeah. Which I actually love the name Nick. But yeah. I'm also in love with Nicolas Cage. And if anyone disagrees with me, you can come fight me right the fuck right now.
It's such a weird person to like.
I'm weird.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
It makes all the sense in the world.
I mean, I don't feel any kind of way about Nicolas Cage.
I adore
him. I have zero thoughts about Nicolas
Cage.
I
adore him.
Never one way or the other.
He's the butt of everyone's jokes and I don't care. I still love you, Nick. If you ever listen to this, hi.
Hi.
Could you imagine if Nicolas Cage ever listened to this? I would literally pee my pants.
Could we? Hey, Nick, if you're listening, can we please have you on the show?
Oh my God, please.
We need you as a guest.
I would die. Absolutely die.
You can stay here in this little office with us.
I would die a happy girl.
Yeah.
So the crowd swelled to the point after 2 weeks in this jail, they could not actually handle all the people.
Okay, guys.
They're like waiting outside. Let us in. We need a Sadik.
What do they think they're going to see?
Something exciting. He's a murderer. Okay. I know.
It's crazy. Everyone's capable. Everyone in some situation pushed to their limits is capable of murder.
I know, but this is not much different than a lot of serial killers who are on fucking death row and they're getting all these letters from crazy people.
That's weird.
I love you. I want to marry you and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it is a really weird
fascination.
Yeah. So it's not.
Just to be clear, that's not what the show is about. We do not idolize serial killers.
Oh, God, no.
Just because we're interested in true crime.
No, not at all. That is a whole different podcast that I want nothing to do with. Mm-hmm. So on Monday, June 5th, Francis and James Wickham were laid to rest on the family plot. In the family plot. Mm-hmm. The grave was marked with a large white marble obelisk and was surrounded by a chain fence to keep tourists away. Because apparently tourists would want to come and they'd trample the grave. And just like, what the fuck?
Why?
I don't know. I mean,
they're just as dead as other dead people.
I know, but it's just like, oh, let's go.
It's a fascination thing.
Who was the guy in the Doors? Oh my God, someone's going to kill me because I can't remember his name. Mm. The Doors guy? He was all famous.
Yeah.
Well, his grave is in France.
Oh, okay.
I was forced to go see it. I don't care.
And you're like, who fucking cares?
Yeah. What is his name? Oh my God, this is going to bother me. Look it up, April.
Okay. What do I look up? The Doors guy?
I know there's like someone screaming at me right now. His name. And I'm like, ah! And you're going to say it. I'll be like, I know who it is. I've seen his grave. But people like to do that.
It's Jim Morrison.
Thank you. Yeah. Jesus. I'm sorry. Everyone in this whole wide world forgot.
You know what? I don't care about the Doors. I'll say it out loud.
Sorry.
I knew his name. I just didn't know off the top of my head.
So Nicholas's trial date was set for October 25th, 1854. And he was pretty unruffled during the proceedings. He often smiled, looked unconcerned. Just like, hey, guys. Okay. This is what I'm imagining in my head. Multiple neighbors, as well as Ellen Hall and herself, took the stand. And she said the next morning when she had returned after the murders, you know, remember she ran off. She stayed with some neighbors. She came back with those neighbors the next morning and she found a straw hat on the furnace. And multiple witnesses stated that that hat looked like the one that Nicholas wore.
I'm so glad Ellen lived.
I know. She was a very smart little cookie.
Would have been sad if he got everybody.
Yeah, me too. And she just booked it out the window. Such a great call.
Yeah.
Such a great call. And also, Catherine, you guys were little smarties.
Well, and Nicholas must have spooked them enough that when she heard screaming, she was like, I know what it is.
Yeah, and it's weird because when I was reading, and I didn't really write everything down. If you want to read the book, you can like read about the trial proceedings. But during the trial, she did say after Catherine crawled out the window, she almost did go back down because she thought maybe I can help the Wickhams. And then she realized that's fucking stupid and I'm going out the window.
Yeah, self-preservation.
And so she did. So thankfully, she made that call because that would have been, he would have definitely got her. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So he also had confessed to the killings to multiple people prior to being caught and after he was caught. So when he first went and saw, you know, Mr. Thompson, remember he was going to shoot? Mm-hmm. He said, yes, I killed them. Told her in the carriage, yes, I killed them. And on the way to jail, the sheriff, who interestingly enough... also wrote for a newspaper, so there was a bit of a conflict of interest there.
That doesn't seem right.
But he did allegedly confess to him. But then he wrote an article about it, and it was kind of like, okay, did you...
Is this a report or is this an article?
Yeah, that was kind of a weird aside, but, you know, he did actually confess to multiple people. The shopkeeper, Mr. Betts, said on the stand that he saw Nicholas on the Wednesday or Thursday before the murders, which happened, you know, Friday. Mm-hmm. And Nicholas had said to him, Ellen has one hole in her body and I will make another. That sounds really disgusting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that probably didn't bode well for
also,
him.
Also, she has a lot of holes in her body. She has... I think you have 7 holes just in your head. That's weird.
It's very weird.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's a very odd statement, but apparently that's what he said.
Well, he was clearly an odd gentleman.
He was very odd, yeah. So Dr. Carpenter took the stand and stated that the victims were literally hacked to pieces. Yeah. He said Mr. Wickham was lying on the floor, attempting to rise, which I said earlier, and Mrs. Wickham was lying upon a plank, which I'm not sure what that means. Like apparently a floorboard? Lifeless. I think it would probably, yeah, like a, she was probably lying on the floor and there's planks in the floor.
Right.
You know.
Did the kid testify?
Mm-mm. Oh. Not that I saw.
Because, I mean, he would have
seen. He might have, but I didn't.
He would have seen him.
I don't know if he ever did see him, though. He was asleep when he was hacked. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure about that.
And it's
there's
like
not a lot of information about that.
Dark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Mrs. Wickham was lying upon a plank, apparently lifeless, and she was in a state of semi-nudity. I don't know why they had to say that, but, I mean, it was bedtime, people.
Yeah, she's sleeping.
Yeah. The doctor also testified that such a large portion of Miss Wickham's brain had fallen out that he was able to stick his finger in the head wound and was unable to find the bottom of the injury. I'm sorry, I had to say it.
Okay.
Your face.
So gross.
It's true, though. I want you to know how bad it was.
I know, that's gross.
Yeah, and he also noted that her clothes appeared to be tucked up. Which I think, in my personal opinion, which I am not a forensic person and I have very limited knowledge, so I'm just saying, it would make sense if she was trying to crawl out the window.
Oh,
you know, like pulling
like she's
up here,
holding it up.
That's what I would think. Okay, but who knows? You know, I don't know. I highly doubt that Nicholas was taking time to do something nasty to her because he wanted to get to Ellen. But who knows? Honestly, who knows?
Yeah.
So Nicholas's attorney asked the jury to find him guilty of manslaughter and not premeditated murder. How do you think that went?
Not good.
Yeah. On October,
I'm going to go with first degree murder.
Yes.
You left for, what, 3 days?
Yeah.
Oh, and then came back and murdered them? Like, no. Yeah,
exactly.
You're not getting even second degree, like, heat of the moment. No, you had time to plan.
Exactly.
Yeah.
On October 27th, which was only 2 days, this trial was only 2 days long, he was found guilty of premeditated murder. And after the verdict, Nicholas all of a sudden started saying, like, oh, wait, you know what? I'm innocent. I'm, you know, who I know who actually did this murder. He blamed it on two transient men.
Okay.
That when, and people
sure,
knew
that's
who
likely.
These guys were, but they would go around doing different work or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The judge was like, yeah, no. He said, quote, you, Nicholas Bean, on Friday the 15th of December next, between the hours of 12 at noon and 2 in the afternoon, be hanged by the neck till you are dead, and may the Lord have mercy upon your soul.
Yeah.
So that was the outcome of his trial.
I mean, good riddance.
Right? So Nicholas, of course, did not go quietly into that good night.
Mm-hmm.
And he would actually attempt to escape jail every chance he could get over the next month and a half.
I mean, you know, if you're looking at, you know, when you're going to die.
You have no, yeah.
You might.
Give it all you got,
take
buddy.
It to the limit. What are they going to do? Kill you twice? They can't.
They can't.
So the best case scenario, you get away.
Yeah, he tried everything. He tried to run out the cell door whenever it was opened. They actually had to chain him at one point. They ended up taking the chains off, but he tried to set his cell on fire. He tried to pull up the wooden planks on the floor. He tried to starve himself, which I don't know why people do that. Cause
I don't know how that's going to get you out.
I don't. They feel like it's. I don't. Why? It's weird.
Well, the jail wouldn't have a duty to protect you if they're going to kill you. I mean, they do.
They do, I guess.
Up until the time that they do kill you.
Mm.
But well, you're not going to kill yourself by a hunger strike.
He gave that up anyway.
By the time they hang you.
That'd be me. I'd be like, it's been 2 days.
Oh my God.
Oh God, give me food. He also tried to scrape old mortar between the rocks of his cell. So he was just trying to dig his way out of there. he told the jailer at one point he was not being, and his real name was Hennigan. And
oh my God.
Could they possibly kill an innocent man? Oh, like, what are God. You doing, people?
He's like, it's not me.
It's not me. On December 7th, he seized another chance for an escape. While jailer Daniel Edwards was in his cell, he took Daniel or Edwards' arm and bit him severely.
Okay.
But another man came in and, you know, saved him. Because he was like frozen in pain and he would have run out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that was his plan. It was foiled every time.
Foiled.
So the day before his execution, Bean's priest, Father McCarthy, came and spent several hours with him in prayer. And it was during this time that Bean asked the priest to make it known that he felt he was innocent of the crime that he was being executed for.
That you confessed to several times to
several
people.
And that he also forgave and did not bear any ill will towards the community or the court.
Oh, good for them.
And also wanted Ellen Holland to know he didn't bear any ill will towards her.
Even though he was going to kill her.
Although he added, right, that he felt it was really her testimony that, quote, swore away his life.
Okay.
So he's still kind of blaming her.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. So after the priest left, Bean talked a woman prisoner in the neighboring cell, which I guess they did that back then, into singing an Irish song while he began to dance a vigorous jig. So that was his night before execution jig.
Final dance.
Yeah. He then spent some time carving on the wall of his cell, quote, Nicholas Bean executed December 15th, 1854. So, of course, we know that execution used to be like a public spectacle. And even schools were closed to allow children to come sometimes.
That's fucking weird.
Such a fun family outing, right?
Yeah.
And this was, of course, so they thought, was a great way to deter people from committing a crime. But it didn't work because people just found enjoyment in the brutality. And it was like, you know, a carnival to them. So it didn't work. So during the 1830s, the New York state government began to really doubt the effectiveness of allowing them to witness, you know, capital punishment. And so to discourage onlookers, the state passed legislation that required that fences be erected to prevent all but a select group of government and legal representatives from witnessing it.
Oh.
So they started around this time, you know, unlike some of the other ones we've talked about, they would actually build a fence. So.
Well, and I guess now the way they do it is like in a room behind glass.
Yeah, no one's seeing it now, you know?
Well, I mean,
except very select few people.
Yeah.
You're not going to have
the victim's family and.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you have to be invited, basically. So the gallows was erected in the Riverhead jail yard, and the scaffold was constructed out of a local oak tree in the 1830s. It was a counterweight style of gallows in which the person was hoisted upwards when a weight was released.
Oh, okay. So pulled them up instead of dropping them down.
Exactly. The gibbet, and, you know, basically a gibbet is any instrument of public execution, including guillotine, executioner's block, impalement stake. Hanging gallows.
Impalement stake, jeez.
Right, it's terrible.
I haven't even heard of that one.
And we've also talked about gibbet cages before, remember, where they hung people in those cages? Yeah. It's for public display. Mm-hmm. And gibbeting refers to the use of a gallows-type structure.
Okay.
So the gibbet was designed not to break your neck for a quick death, but it would be so you'd strangle for as long as 12 minutes before dying.
Yikes.
So, I mean, they wanted to really drive it home you know, fuck you.
Yeah.
It's kind of what it seems to me.
And also don't do drugs.
Don't do drugs.
Stay in school.
don't murder.
Yeah.
That would be a good one.
Yeah.
So after each use, the scaffold was then disassembled and stored in the jail until it was needed again. Nicholas was the sixth man to be executed in Suffolk County since the American Revolution and the fourth executed on the Suffolk County counterweight gallows. The day before the hanging, the gibbet was taken out of storage and was erected in the prison yard behind the jail. And after the scaffold was in place, workers pieced together a closely fitted 20-foot tall pine board fence per legislative.
Wow. Nobody's seeing over that.
Yeah. Direction. That's what I'm trying to say. Per legislative direction. And then that enclosed the area of execution and would block the crowd from witnessing his death. So,
which is so weird because the whole point was that so they could witness his death.
Yeah, but remember around the 1830s, they were kind of like, eh.
They were pulling back from that.
Yeah, they're like, I don't know if this is working. People getting wild out here, okay? So that same day on December 14th, people started to arrive for the execution, including women and children. Even though there's a fence, we coming, okay? By the 15th, over 3,000 people were there. Stores were selling spots on upper floors and roofs for roofs.
Oh, so you could see over the fence.
Yeah. For people to stand on and watch. Yeah. Hmm. And they had to post guards around the wall so that people would not break it down.
Oh, my God.
People are crazy.
People get wild.
Yeah. At 12.05 p.m. on December 15th, Nicholas was led from his jail cell to the jail yard. He prayed aloud the entire walk. The rope was attached to the beam above his head, and he said goodbye to his priest by shaking his hand. The rope was then placed around his neck, and the rope holding the counterweight cut, and the weight dropped. It's like they didn't even waste any time at all.
Yeah.
Nicholas's body was hoisted up several feet in the air, where witnesses said he struggled for only 3 seconds before all motion of his body stopped. Mm. 1 minute after the hanging, the body was checked for signs of life. His pulse was 60. At 2 minutes, his pulse was a pulse of 84 was found, which is interesting.
That's like walking around.
Yeah. Pulse. At 3 minutes, his pulse was 64. And when checked again at 5 minutes, no pulse.
Okay.
So Nicholas Behan, aged 24, was declared dead. The body was left hanging in the gallows for 40 minutes so that officials could be assured the task was complete. So they cut him down 40 minutes later.
That's a long time.
Isn't that a long time?
To just like stand around?
Just like checking your watch? I don't know.
Are you just like looking at each other like, so how's your kids?
It's like, is it lunch yet?
Yeah.
It's weird. So weird. So Stephen Winston, remember, our little 12 or 13 year old
guy,
he was the only one of Behan's victims to survive his injuries, and he made a good recovery and lived on into adulthood.
Good.
He moved back to New York City, where he had resided prior to coming out to Kachog. And there he lived with his wife, Julia, on Sullivan Street, and found employment as a laborer in a carriage shop. Hmm. It's not known when or where he died, but he did grow up and he did have a wife.
That's good.
Yeah. So Ellen Holland, a few years after the trial, she actually met a fellow native of Ireland by the name of Daniel Haggerty, and they were married, and they settled in Riverhead, not far from where the trial had taken place, mm-hmm. and she had 3 daughters and a very successful farm of her own.
Oh,
yeah, good for her. She be rockin'. And she died in 1901 at the age of 82.
Oh, she lived a long life.
Yeah. She lived a long life. The Wickham family continues to farm the land around there. Eventually, they planted large orchards in addition to traditional fields of corn and other vegetables. And their descendants continue this tradition to this day, which is really cool.
In the same house.
I wish I had a family home like that. I just think that's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in addition, the family has branched into other specialty items, becoming a particularly known far and wide for their delicious donuts.
Interesting.
I would like to look up Wickham's Donuts. Thank you. I'd like donuts right now. In 1910, workers discovered a skeleton at the construction site of the new county jail in Riverhead. And even though little remained of the body, there was little, like many smaller bones having dissolved over time. A Dr. Robert G. Cornwell was called in to examine the burial. And he stated the bones were undoubtedly that of Nicholas Behan. And that he also remembered this trial from when he was
Wait, where did they find the bones?
It was in a construction site of the new county jail. So it was probably just on a plot of land.
So they like dug up the graveyard of the county jail?
Oh, they just found that one body.
That's weird.
That's where they buried him. And they probably buried him because, you know, you can't trust the public and they were acting all wackadoo.
Oh,
so they didn't say where they were going to bury him. That yeah. makes sense. And so in 1910, they found these bones and this doctor said, yeah, that's Nicholas Behan, and he actually had remembered the whole trial and everything like wow. that. Today, Behan's exact burial location is unknown, as it is unclear where the bones were sent after 1910.
Oh.
And that is the horrific axe murder of the Wickham family.
Wow.
Isn't that bonkers?
Yeah.
So it kind of is like a stalking story.
It is definitely a stalking story.
Yeah, but it also kind of compounded a lot of the racism happening at the time too, like, oh hey, look, we told you about these Irish people, and it's like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. You know, so yeah, there was a lot of contention around that time. It's a really interesting story. I had never heard of it until recently.
Me either. Yeah. I feel like we've looked up a lot of stories we never heard of.
I know, which is actually really interesting to me.
We're not telling the stories, it's just like regular old shit.
You can't just find this. Oh, no, we're doing extra shit.
Yeah. You can't just find this anywhere.
Yeah, so interesting story. I hope you liked it.
It was good.
Yeah,
it was a good one. And it was, this drink was a good match.
I agree. And I'm just so happy that Steven grew up to have a good life. I was like so bothered by that. I know.
I mean, poor, you know, James and...
I know.
Francis, but...
No, I agree, but just the fact that he...
But he was a baby.
He was a baby.
12-year-olds are babies.
Yeah.
I don't care what your parents tell you.
Do you want to tell them where to find us?
Yes. If you'd like to email us, you can email us at killerspiritspod@gmail.com. You can send us cocktail ideas, story ideas, if you want to hear us talk about something. We have some things in the hopper, but we're always willing to...
In the hopper.
We're always willing to add something to the list. I mean, we do a story or two every week, so.
You got it.
Yeah, we do. We could do whatever one you want to hear about.
Yes.
You can find us on Twitter at Killer Spirits, on Instagram at Killer Spirits Pod, where you can find our drink videos and also pictures related to the story. And you can find us on patreon.com/killerspirits. We can see all of our videos of us making the drinks and talking about them and blah blah blah.
Yeah, and if you know, give us a little rate and review, we'd love it. Yeah,
rate and review us. And we're also on TikTok at Killer Spirits Pod.
That's right. I was just gonna say, I just took a sip of your drink that I haven't, because you know I was busy blabbing for the last however long. It is so good.
It is good.
The fact that it was just sitting there, it actually got better.
Guys, don't sleep on the Long Island.
I was sleeping.
It's good.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We love you.
Bye.
Bye.